This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
A healthcare giant swallows a big pill. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishor, in for David Brancaccio. Cigna, the health insurer, has announced plans to buy the pharmacy benefits manager Express Scripts in a $67 billion cash-in-stock deal. It's the latest example of consolidation in the healthcare industry. Marketplace's Marielle Segarra has been following this. Marielle, will you tell us about these two companies and also what is a pharmacy benefits manager?
So Cigna is a public health insurance company with a market cap around $44 billion. Express Scripts is also public. Its market cap is around $47 billion. And as you said, it's a pharmacy benefits manager. It's basically a go-between in the healthcare industry. It negotiates prices with drug makers on behalf of insurance companies and employers. It also partners with pharmacies like CVS and Rite Aid to get prescription drugs to patients.
So why are those two things merging?
I mean, everybody else is doing it. CVS is buying the health insurer Aetna. Walgreens is buying part of Rite Aid. So their competitors are getting bigger. Also, they may be going up against Amazon soon, the company known for disrupting industries. There's talk that it might start delivering prescription drugs. So the idea is this merger could help Cigna and Express Scripts compete.
Got it. Marketplace's Marielle Segarra. Thank you. The White House says it'll formalize its plan to levy tariffs on aluminum and steel today. This is over the objections of 107 GOP lawmakers who've sent a letter urging the president to reconsider. The EU has threatened to retaliate on American goods. Economists point out that the U.S. already has extremely high tariffs on Chinese steel, so these new tariffs would mostly hurt allies. Investors have been digesting these developments over the past week. It's been a bit of a bumpy ride in stocks. But they also have their eyes on economic trends here at home. Tomorrow is the first jobs report since the last one that preceded a violent market correction. Diane Swonk is chief economist at accounting firm Grant Thornton and joins us to talk about this. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning.
Tomorrow we get the employment report from the Commerce Department. What are you watching for?
What we had was in the month of January, there was a lot of workers who literally couldn't get to work, particularly in the South, because of unusually harsh winter weather. Actually, there was electricity outages and tourist destinations were shuttered, which means the composition of gains in the month of January were more high-wage workers that got to work or got paid anyways than what we usually see in a month. That means that the wage data in the month of February, as those low-wage workers come back to work, could be much softer than we saw in the month of January, and that could be something that markets are very focused on, and they could misread that as a slowdown in wage gains rather than these month-to-month distortions, and that's something they're watching for the Federal Reserve and what it means for the trajectory on interest rate hikes this year.
Wages are sort of something everyone's obsessing about right now because it might be a sign of inflation, right?
Exactly. And will we get wage push inflation in and over and above anything we might get from tariffs, which are inflation without the offsetting wage increases?
Diane Swonk, chief economist at Grant Thornton, thanks so much.
Thank you.
This week, we've been looking at the economic attitudes and experiences, hopes and fears of Americans through our Marketplace Edison research poll. And for the first time in the survey, we asked about the kind of work people do, the employment arrangement they have, whether people earn some of their living from a permanent job with a traditional employer, or if they earn money through a side hustle, also known as the gig economy. So, for example, working as an independent contractor or a freelancer or a driver for Uber or Lyft, that kind of thing. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has been digging into the data and joins us. Hi, Mitchell.
Hey, Sabri. Good to be here.
So, Mitchell, one of the big things to come out of this survey is that about a quarter of Americans, one in four, have some kind of gig work. That strikes me as a very high number.
Right. And we actually found that for 44% of those people who do have some gig work, it's their primary source of income. You know, this roughly confirms what other surveys have been finding, that this kind of alternative gig work has soared in the past decade. It's up 50% between 2005 and 2015. In fact, according to economist Larry Katz at Harvard, this accounts for more than 90% of the net employment growth over the last 10 years.
Given that so many Americans are working this way, how should we feel about that? How's that working out for them?
Our poll actually found significantly higher economic anxiety among these folks. They worry more about not having enough money for basic expenses and emergency. And, you know, they feel less like their gig work utilizes their skills, their experience and education.
You know, I was recently traveling and my Uber driver was telling me how he was normally a hairdresser, but, you know, his hairdressing job fell through and he was going to be unemployed for a few months. So he went in and started being an Uber driver. So that helped him out in that way. So, I mean, I wonder, are there not pluses to this type of work as well?
It's a mixed bag. Obviously, some people like it a lot. You know, they like the control of the hours. They like being their own boss. The part about not being able to count on a steady income, especially for lower skilled and, you know, maybe lower paid workers, probably not so great. I talked to Don Johnson. He lives in Boyne City, Michigan, which is way up north. He's 62. He used to work in a car parts painting shop. That work moved to Ohio. He's also done roofing and landscaping. Now he occasionally works for his son. He goes down to Flint. His son's got a landscaping and road grading business. And he says he is always strapped for cash.
You know what it is when you're working? You start out $9 an hour and you make it all the way up to the max. Then they just pack up and leave on you. Then you go back out and try to get another job, and they only want to pay you like $8.50 an hour. And that's the same job you already did and all that, you know?
And, you know, he's like a lot of gig workers. He's cobbling together as many jobs to make ends meet. A lot of these people want something stable and permanent with a reliable income eventually if they can find it.
Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman, thanks very much.
You're welcome, Sabri.
I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.